The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat, fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up and you did it. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Of course, I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is January the 5th, 2016. Again, just 5 days into the new year. What will this new year bring? Will it bring justice? Will we be able to replace the system of injustice that's based on the myth of white supremacy? Or will we get more of the same? So today's program, couple of things that I want to revisit. But before I lay out today's program notes for you, let me give out the telephone numbers for anybody who would like to share any information on air or respond to anything that will be said on this program today by yours truly. So the telephone number. Let me just do a quick check. Okay, we good. All right, the telephone number is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032-POUND. That's 549032-POUND. Of course, it's star 6 and 1 if you would like to come in on air. Obviously, we have enough room on the conference line for people who like to listen through their telephones. Also, you can use the web-based Flash phone to make a free call to the conference line from anywhere in the world that you may be. Obviously, you have to have an internet connection in order to listen to this digital radio station. The last way to get in on the conversation or dialogue is to give us a call at 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030 is that telephone number if you would like to give us a call on the studio line. All right, so let's go ahead and lay out the program notes for today. Today I want to revisit the story coming out of Oregon concerning the takeover of an empty federal building by white suspected racists. I have a little bit more information than I had yesterday when I talked about it, even though I broadened the perspective on that issue and connected it to related issues. But anyway, a listener of the program sent me a press release that came from the Department of Justice, the acting U.S. Attorney General, Billy J. Williams, who is, of course, the U.S. attorney or acting U.S. attorney out of the District of Oregon. Why is he only the acting U.S. attorney general? Why hasn't he been confirmed or what's going on there? But that's not what we want to talk about. That's so totally separate issue. But this press release is a two-page press release was shared with me today. And I had already had some of this information, but now I have a little bit more information. And yesterday I stated that if there was an injustice, if these men served their time, that if they then got out and then a federal judge said, oh, hold up, wait a minute, I don't think you got enough time, because that's the way that it was being put out there by some of those white people occupying that federal building in Oregon, but they didn't give you the whole story. And so, you know, I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt until I got more information, okay? And I have more information thanks to a listener of the program who sent me that press release. Thank you very much. And so I want to talk about why this is just another case of whiny white men claiming that their rights are being trampled. You know, playing the victim card. We see that a lot over the past couple of years. You know, white people claiming, I shouldn't say white people, I should say suspected white racists, claiming that somehow they're being victimized and coming up with this term called reverse discrimination. We see this rich white girl in Texas has a case before the Supreme Court, which I'm going to have to do a check back in on that case to see where it stands now. But she whining and complaining, talking about, oh, I wanted to go to the University of Texas. My grades wasn't good enough for me to get in on my own merit. So I'm going to complain about these black people and other nine white people getting in. And they're, you know, taking up my slot and whatnot. You know, even though, you know, as we talked about that story, it showed that the number one beneficiary of a quote-unquote affirmative action program run by the University of Texas benefits primarily poor whites, and I suspect that they're white females, because white females do qualify under affirmative action, and that is how white people game the system. That they dominate. I was looking at the census report for my city the other day. Well, I shouldn't say my city, because I don't live in that city, but a town that I do business in, go to the store, whatnot, frequent businesses and everything. And I was looking at the census report on, I think it's census.gov, I'm not sure, or Quick Facts. You know, you could type in Quick Facts and then type in a city or a town or a state, and you can get, you know, demographic information. And I found that, you know, primarily in this area, the ones who are benefiting the most or who has the most minority-owned businesses are, you guessed it, white women. All right. So they already benefit the most from affirmative action. And, you know, they just want people to believe that they're being persecuted and they're losing rights, and all of these non-white people are, you know, getting things that they don't deserve and all this and that. And when you look at the actual data, you'll see that they are the ones who, as always, getting things that they did not work for, that they didn't deserve, that they didn't earn, you know. So yeah, we can look throughout all of history, all throughout the history of this continent, and see how, you know, they were given land that wasn't their own, that they didn't pay for, and how they even stole other people's land, including my family here in Gaston County. But, you know, I'm not here to complain about my family's problems and whatnot, but just want to make the point that these people have benefited throughout history from what you might call affirmative action for white people, and they just want to whine and complain, and that's all they're doing is whining and complaining about nothing. Now, since I brought that, I wanted to revisit that story from yesterday that I discussed with you on air. I also took a brief look at the real state of injustice that exists in the racist state of Oregon, and I want to share some information with you. I got in contact with Max and Johannin, the co-host and co-producers of New Abolitionist Radio, that comes on every Wednesday night on Black Talk Radio Network, and they do a segment called America is Ferguson, where they might, you know, look at the states. And so I asked them, did y'all do, because I don't recall, a segment being produced on Oregon. Is Oregon Ferguson? You know, is Oregon Ferguson? Are we seeing the same racist patterns and practices that we saw come out of the Ferguson report? Are we seeing those same patterns and practice of racial discrimination going on in Oregon that we saw going on in Ferguson? So I pulled up some information on that to share with you today. Now, I also, and this is, you know, this could just be a coincidence or not. You know, they say one time's a coincidence. Two times, you know, maybe it's still just a coincidence. But three times, no, I'm seeing a pattern. And what I'm seeing a pattern of is things that we discuss on these airways on Black Talk Radio Network. After we air a program and we talk about whatever story, talk about whatever issue that there is to talk about that day that we decided to discuss, I didn't see it turn up in other media. Now, am I complaining about that? No, I'm not complaining about that. You know, this is public radio. This is listener-funded public radio. This platform is managed by the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. And so we want the things that we discuss, we want our media to be shared far and wide. You know, that's the whole point of us doing this, is to spark a conversation, to share information, to give you a viewpoint that the mainstream, the dominant population, they don't tend to see it from our perspectives and whatnot. And so there was an article yesterday we had on Ramona Africa, and we had really scheduled her last week to talk about the upcoming parole hearings for three other sisters, Debbie Africa, man, I'm forgetting their names already. But yeah, three of them, three black women who are part of the MOVE Act organization. And, you know, they've served almost 40 years in prison for a crime that they did not commit. They have been recommended by parole every time by the prison officials, but the parole board keeps denying them parole. And so, since I was also going to discuss this situation that's going on in Oregon with these whiny white people complaining about nothing, I brought up the fact that Ramona Africa was a survivor of the terrorist attack that the city of Philadelphia launched against the MOVE family house, in where the FBI supplied the Philadelphia police, who was under Frank Rizzo at the time, that old racist beast. Glad he's dead. Hope he's burning in hell. The FBI supplied the Philadelphia Police Department with C4 explosives, which they dropped on the roof of this home when they knew full well there were women and children and animals in there. You know, it, not that we should think that these sort of acts of terrorism are justified when they're committed against male, but y'all know where I'm coming from. They knew all these children were in this building, and they didn't care. They didn't care. They didn't want to wait them out, as we talked about yesterday, as that ex-law enforcement, whatever he used to be, was on CNN talking about, oh, let's just wait these white people out. We don't want to do anything drastic. We don't want to make them nervous and cause them to shoot at the police. And then the police had to go in and kill them and all of that. No, they didn't want to wait out the MOVE family. They were trying to serve a so-called eviction notice. This is an eviction notice. They weren't trying to go in there and arrest anybody for any heinous crimes that they committed. No, they were trying to evict them due to complaints from people in the community about messages going out over loudspeakers from the home at all times of the night. you know, and I have to be honest, if that was me, if I live next door or up the block and this is keeping me up at night and I got to go get up and go to school or I got to get up and go to work, you know, that wouldn't be cool. You know what I'm saying? And so I can imagine I would probably complain about it too. But I, you know, knowing what I know today, I would not call the police on them, because what did the police do in terms of trying to evict them? They going to drop a C4 bomb on them because they didn't come out the house. All right. And so, you know, I asked her to speak on that as a survivor of that heinous crime that was committed, killed women, children, and all the animals that was in that building. So anyway, I think this person who wrote this article on Think Progress, which is supposed to be, I don't know if it's supposed to be a liberal or a progressive website and whatnot, but they put out some disinformation about that bombing. And I'm thinking, you know, I was like, you know, it's possible that they could have been thinking along the same lines as I was thinking and didn't hear the program. But I'm starting to see a pattern and practice of things we talk about on this program showing up in other media. And that's cool. That's cool. But if you're gonna write about stuff, you ought to get the doggone facts first. And she laid out the facts for you yesterday. So I don't know if you heard her yesterday lay out those facts, if you wanted to rush something to the press to get it out there and whatnot. I don't know what the case was, but I do know when I read that article, the headline was misleading. The headline, you know, and they were trying to compare it to the occupation of this federal building and then show that, oh, this is what happens to black people when they try occupation. Well, first of all, it's not the same thing. Your headline was misleading, and they were not occupying somebody else's property or broke into a federal building. They were in their own home. So first of all, that was wrong. And then, you know, I read the rest of the article, and then, you know, it's shared lies. It shared lies, and they were putting the blame on the Move family, black people, for what happened to them, but they kind of did in a way. So we'll take a look at that. I want to share that with you because I'm telling you, man, I am not one of those partisan people. I don't play by I'm a Republican, I'm a liberal, I'm a conservative, I'm a this, I'm a that. Because, you know, all of these people be practicing deception, all of them practicing slavery. And whatnot. I shouldn't say all of them, but 99% of them are. And if you're going to write about something like that, you know, there have been documentaries made about this. There are news clips that have been made about this. And some of the victims are still alive that you could have checked with to get the facts before you told a blatant lie about them shooting at the police. So I want to talk about that. All right, today. Also, you know, and that did occur in Philadelphia. Now, in other news I want to share with you, there's going to be a town hall meeting, I believe it's tomorrow, and I'll share the details with you when I get to it, if you haven't clicked on it yet to get the details. But there's going to be a town hall meeting in Philadelphia for political prisoner Mumia Abdul-Jamal tomorrow evening. That's going down, and he is currently involved in a legal battle for access to a drug that has a 95% cure rate for people affected with the hepatitis C virus. It has a 95% cure rate. And, you know, we have actually covered that story primarily on Political Prisoner Radio about a week ago. Not this past Sunday, but the prior Sunday, we had Noel Hanrahan from Prison Radio on as a guest to talk about this lawsuit. This is a monumentous lawsuit, or monumental lawsuit that could have widespread implications. It could set a national precedence in terms of prisoners being given access to proper healthcare treatment. Because, you know, when doing research and listening to some of the reports from other people who had done research, that this is a national health crisis in the prisons, on the prison plantations. Hepatitis C, you got thousands of prisoners in Pennsylvania alone, where You know, Mamiya has filed his lawsuit to get access to this new drug. I don't know how new it is, but it has a 95% cure rate for hepatitis C virus. Now, hepatitis C virus is a contagious disease. So if you are leaving these people untreated and all you're trying to do is manage their symptoms or whatnot, and you want to deny them access to curing what ails them, well, you're putting everybody in that prison at risk because this is a contagious disease. So there's going to be a town hall meeting centered around the legal battle that Mumia Abu-Jamal, political prisoner, has launched in the state of Pennsylvania to get access to this drug that has a 95% cure rate. And then also I found out today that Eddie Africa, also of the MOVE family, the MOVE organization, is coming up for parole. And that wasn't mentioned yesterday, so it's possible that this is new information. And so he's coming up. He's one of the MOVE 9 that we talked about yesterday, but he's coming up for parole, and we are asking people to please make those phone calls. All right, please make those phone calls for his parole. And whatnot. Okay, so we'll talk about that. And then I want to jump to this. I made a video about this last week when it was first announced that the CEO of USA Inc. was going to take some executive action to close these gun show loopholes and to require people who sell guns at these gun shows and online to start doing background checks. And I talked about that, and I tried not to get into my emotions, and while I will never trust USA Inc., I don't always take the position that what they're doing is wrong and it's going to lead to something else. And you know, gun violence, while it isn't a bigger problem as the media hypes it up to be, or as liberals hype it up to be, it is a problem. It's a problem, but it's not a huge problem. And so I do believe in common sense things that we can do to prevent, you know, guns from falling into the wrong hands and whatnot. So, you know, I wanted to take another look at that. The corporate officer from the district that I live in North Carolina, he made a post today. Patrick McHenry, U.S. corporate officer, Patrick McHenry of the 10th District here in North Carolina, made a Facebook post, and I had to chime in on it, as I often do when he posts something that, you know, I feel like, yeah, I need to let him know how I feel about the issue and let the other voters in this district know. So, you know, he is following the party line, and he's making it to be about something that is not about. And let me back up for a minute. Listen, there are legitimate concerns on both sides of the issue on this. And I do have concerns about executive action. And again, I talked about it. I didn't really talk about my concerns about executive orders and whatnot. But, you know, I talked about when a president, CEO of USA Inc., Obama, was being asked by members of Congress to do this. All right. So members of Congress wrote him a letter. It was over 100 of them, man, members of the House and the Senate, wrote him a letter asking him to take this executive action. And I talked about, you know, all of this executive power that the CEO of America has, is that why don't they take these actions on these hot button issues? And I talked about how, you know, it's like red meat for the base. They don't want to solve the problem. They want the issue to remain on the table so that they can throw it out there every election cycle to say, hey, this is why you need to vote for and elect all Democrats, or hey, this is why you need to vote for Republicans if you want to do something about abortion. And then when they have majorities in both houses and control the executive branch, they don't do anything. They don't do anything, and nobody calls them out on it. And so I talked about that, but I digress. When I get to that story, I'll talk about how, you know, there are legitimate concerns. I also want to talk about what the corporate officer, Patrick McHenry from the 10th District of North Carolina, wrote, because he's just echoing what some of the other Republicans are saying. And I don't really care to even talk about, you know, Ben Carson and whatnot. That man says some ridiculous things. Anybody that would compare mandating people buy health care insurance to slavery, when we have real slavery, and even if we're not talking about 21st century slavery, and we're talking about 17th century or 18th century or 19th century slavery, to compare, you know, compensatory health care coverage to slavery, man, I really don't care too much what you have to say. And the only reason I'll say something is because I want to use you as an example for proxy racism, and how non-white people are tools of racism and when they do these sort of things. And so I don't even care what he had to say, but I've been hearing a lot of what would we call that? I don't know. They call themselves being whistleblowers or the canaries in the coal mine. And man, these people ain't doing nothing but playing partisan games. So I want to talk about that issue. And then also, this on a side note, this just goes to show you that the CEO, and I said this before in the past, that the CEO of USA Inc. could issue executive orders to end 21st century slavery. All right? But they don't. But he won't. He won't do it. And none of them will do it. The only one I ever said that I heard would do something to, he couldn't end it, but would do something that would really impact it and free a whole lot of enslaved persons in America, was Ron Paul. That's why he got my vote, you know, both times that he ran for Congress. For president. And just on that issue alone, when he said if I was elected president, I would use executive action to free every last single person in a federal prison on nonviolent drug crimes. And the CEO, that's why I'm telling people, the CEO has a lot of power in this country over the executive branch. And he could free a whole lot of enslaved people if he wanted to. But he don't want to. All right? Because he ain't working for the people. He can act like Lincoln is his, well, Lincoln probably is a good role model for him, or a good, what do they call those type of people when you look up to them, icons or role models, whatever you want to call them. But he has, especially when he first ran for president, he liked to compare himself to Lincoln and whatnot. And you know, because he launched his campaign from the same little town, Springfield, Illinois, that Lincoln launched his campaign from, and, you know, talks a lot about, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation and all of that. But Lincoln was a great deceiver. He deceived the world into believing that the United States abolished slavery when he, as a lawyer, knew that exception clause would allow the South to and the North to continue to practice slavery. They just transformed it from, you know, private plantations to jails and prisons, where then you could lease out the prisoners back to the plantations and the other businesses that was profiting from enslaved African labor, much like they're doing today. So I just want to throw that in there as a side note. And then last but not least, and we're coming up on a station identification break and a message music break here. Try to pay more attention to the clock. But lastly, all right, today I was going through my email. Somebody called the studio line, and I have called for people if, you know, you shy or whatever. You don't want to talk to me live on air where I can ask you questions to what you're saying, or you just want to leave a comment You can just call the studio line, because I only use the studio line for Black Talk Radio News. All right. The other programs use the conference line. I just happen to use both of them. But anyway, I've said that you can leave a voicemail. You can leave a voicemail. I'll play it on air. I don't know if he meant for me to play this voicemail that this black man left on our studio line yesterday, but I'm going to share it with you today. He's making some accusations towards Black Talk Radio Network and black people on Black Talk Radio Network in general. And we want to take a listen and we want to see if it has any merit, if his criticism is constructive, because I'm not above criticism. You know what I'm saying? In my book, there are no sacred cows. All right. While I do afford certain respect to certain people, our elders and whatnot, but they are not above asking questions. It's just about how you go about it. You don't want to be disrespectful or anything like that, but we learn from asking questions. And so I ain't got a problem with people criticizing the things that I say on this station or things I write about on social media or publish on blacktalkradionetwork.com. I am not some sensitive little sensitive person that I'm going to get all upset if you got a point of disagreement with me. I ain't going to get mad at you. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to get mad at you. Well, it depends on what you say to me, you know, but I'm not above any criticism. Black Talk Media Project is not above any criticism. Black Talk Radio Network isn't above any criticism. But you better believe your criticism better be constructive and you better be bringing up some valid points. So I want to share with the listening audience, share with Black Talk Radio Network, since the comments were made about us as a collective, I want to share that with you before we go off air today. So those are the things that I want to talk about. Want to try to keep it fast moving because I tell you, time does fly. So if you got a question or a comment or something you want to get in, please don't hesitate to give me a call. Give me a call at 704-951-5030. 704-951-5030. And even when I'm on air live, if I don't pick you up because sometimes I miss the notification, leave a voicemail. I'll see it when I come, when, you know, it'll show me and I'll play it. So, you know, you have numerous ways to get in, get your voices on this platform and out over these airways, because this is the people's platform, man. It's funded by the people. It was made for the people. So this is our platform. All right, the other way is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660, 549-032 pound. And, of course, hit *6 and 1 if you would like to comment on air. The caller who just called in on the studio line, hang with us. I want to go ahead and take my station identification break, and when I come back, we'll skip the message music and we'll come back straight to your call. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. And yes, indeed, I'm broadcasting from behind enemy lines.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And we got Brother Maximus Partis on the line. What's going on with you, Brother Max?
Peace, Brother Scotty. I know that you was going to talk about Oregon today, and you reached out to me asking about Oregon. Is Ferguson, have we done that yet? So I took the liberty today of putting together what I could for an Oregon is Ferguson, so you would have the actual statistics of what's going on in Oregon right now.
Yes, and I actually shared an image that I found from the 2010 census, the Oregon incarceration rates by race and ethnicity. That's from the last census. The next census won't be until, 2020?
Right.
Yeah, 4 more years to the next census. But I want to, and I also got some information from Safety and Justice. What is this? I think this is an NGO. I'm not sure. Let me see. Safetyandjustice.org. So this looks like a NGO, meaning a non-governmental organization. But Max, I do want to hear from you. But before we get to that, just hang out with me if you have the time so I can set everything up, okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, so again, I was talking about the story from yesterday, and I got a little bit more information. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is just a case of whiny-ass white men playing the victim card, acting like all of their rights are being trampled and whatnot. And I'm not trying to say that their rights aren't being trampled. Everybody's rights are being trampled in this country, but they ain't concerned about everybody's rights. And in this particular case, nobody's rights have been violated, you know. So let me just share what a listener sent to me. This is a press release from the Department of Justice. The acting United States Attorney Billy J. Williams, who is in the District of Oregon. So let me just read this to you briefly. I should have highlighted the relevant portions, but I'm a fast reader. Let me read this because I want to share all the information. As the acting United States Attorney for the District of Oregon, I shouldn't have said Attorney General, but the U.S. Attorney, I write to the citizens of Harney County to address ongoing attempts by outside individuals and organizations that are making statements and using social media to express views which are clearly contrary to what occurred publicly in an open courtroom. I understand that there are some individuals and organizations who object to the Hammonds returning to prison to serve the remainder of their sentences mandated by statute. I respect their right to peacefully disagree with the prison terms imposed. However, any criminal behavior contemplated by those who may object to the court's mandate that harm someone will not be tolerated and will result in serious consequences. The following is a summary of the facts in the United States versus the White and Stephen Hammond, including the actions and positions taken by this office throughout the course of the case. 5 years ago, a federal grand jury charged the White and Stephen Hammond with committing arson on public lands and endangering firefighters. The charges came after the Hammonds rejected an offer to settle the case by pleading guilty to lesser charges and sentences. 3 years ago, after a 2-week trial in Pendleton, Oregon, a jury found 70-year-old Dwight and his son, 43-year-old Stephen Hammond, guilty of committing arson on public lands in 2001. Quick note here. Oregon is predominantly white. I didn't look up that specific county, but I'm willing to bet you that he probably got an all-white jury. So he can't sit up there and say, you know, proclaim that they were victimized through a bunch of black people unjustly convicted them. All right, so let me continue. Stephen Hammond was also found guilty of committing a second arson in 2006. They were found not guilty of other arson charges. And while the jury was deliberating on the remaining charges, the Hammonds negotiated for the dismissal of those charges and a promise from the U.S. attorney to recommend the minimum sentence mandated by law. And I'm here to tell you, as a person who worked with other people in the abolitionist movement, this is not something that is widely afforded to non-white people and other poor whites in counties like mine. This is not something that they get. All right. Now, they were found not guilty of the. They negotiated the dismissal of those charges and a promise from the U.S. attorney to recommend the minimum sentence mandated by law. The Hammonds assured the trial judge that they knew the law required they serve no less than 5 years in prison. The U.S. attorney also agreed they should remain free until sentencing. Now, I just want to say right now that we got, I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all, Sister Cece, our assistant who helps me behind the scenes and scheduling guests for this program and doing other stuff. She's a voiceover artist. Y'all probably heard the new audio ad that we played. That's her voice. All right. So her son, never been in trouble before, didn't have a criminal record. He's facing some criminal charges, and they got him on an outrageous high bail. An outrageous high bail and whatnot. And he didn't have any prior acts, any prior criminal records and stuff. And so, you know, we talked about on New Abolitionist Radio, you know, how bail is used as a revenue generator for the private bail companies. Now, the Hammonds had long ranch private and public lands in eastern Oregon. Although they leased public lands for grazing, they were not permitted to burn the lands without prior authorization from the BLM. That's the Bureau of Land Management. Now, I'll stop right there. These Bundy boys that are the fools, the idiots who are occupying the federal building, which is nothing but an empty warehouse out in the middle of nowhere. And now they're on Facebook and other social media begging people to send them snacks and socks and stuff. So they acted out of emotion, probably just trying to grab some attention, because these idiots didn't have enough sense to take supplies with them before they did this. All right. But that, you know, let me continue. So anyway, my point was the racist Bundy, their father, did not pay the fees to license public lands to graze his cattle. And I might well add, in the case of these ranchers, their beef is probably being processed by prisoners, prison slave labor. So I just want to add that. But these people did have the proper leases that they needed, so they weren't breaking the law. They did break the law when they did not get permits to burn the land. They didn't get the authorization. Now, in 1999, a BLM, that's a Bureau of Land Management employee, reminded Stephen Hammond of this after he started a fire that escaped onto public land. So he was given a warning. He was given a warning the first time. All right. At trial, jurors heard from a hunting guide, a hunter, and the hunter's father, who saw the Hammonds illegally slaughter a herd of deer on public land. Now, I was just talking to my cousin the other day, because for whatever reason, there's something in this field behind our house that these deer at night like to eat. It's probably those sweet wild onions. And it'd be a whole bunch of them. It'd be a herd of them. And I was like, man, if the grid shuts down, it'll be easy to get them deer, because I could shoot them from my back porch. And he was like, you better not do that, because it's illegal in North Carolina to hunt deer at night. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. All right. I already knew that, but I was, you know, if the grid goes down, I ain't trying to pay attention to no kind of laws when I'm trying to feed my family. All right. But that's neither here nor there. So you got these hunters who witnessed this man illegally slaughter a herd of deer on public land, not his private land. And we're talking about private land on our family land. All right. At least 7 deer were shot, with others limping or running from the scene. Less than 2 hours later, the hunting guide and the hunter and his father were forced to abandon their campsite because a fire was burning in the area where the deer had been shot. The hunting guide's testimony and photographs established fires were burning hours before Stephen Hammond called the BLM and said he was going to do a burn of invasive species in the area. So he, you know, after the fact, he wants to try to cover up the crime. A teenage relative. Now, this is contributing to the delinquency of a juvenile. So we're talking about thugs and criminals here, okay? All right. A teenage relative who was with the Hammonds in 2001 when those fires were set told the jury that he was handed a box of Strike Anywhere matches. And this is their own relative now. And Stephen Hammond told him to drop lit matches on the ground so as to light up the whole country on fire. That's in quotations. This 17-year-old, well, it doesn't say how old he was. It just says teenage. So we'll just say this child did as he was instructed to do, and the resulting 8 to 10-foot flame spread quickly. Fearing for his life, he was forced to take shelter in a creek. The jury heard evidence that once back at the ranch, Dwight and Stephen told him to keep his mouth shut and that nobody needed to know about the fire. The fires destroyed evidence of the deer slaughter and took 139 acres of public land out of public use for 2 years. All right. The evidence at trial convinced the jury beyond a reasonable doubt that the Hammonds were guilty of the federal crime of arson, that is, maliciously damaging United States property by fire. The jury was neither asked if the Hammonds were terrorists, nor were defendants ever charged with or accused of terrorism. Suggesting otherwise is simply flat out wrong. Now, I'm going to stop there for a second. I want to remind you, Alan Buford in Baltimore, who admitted it out of frustration, out of his emotions, and we're talking about a child, destroyed a police vehicle by busting out the windows and whatnot. All right. His parents turned him in. All right. Made him go turn himself in. He turned himself in. They charged him with an act of terrorism. And this boy is facing, who knows, up to life in prison for destroying. So here these guys have destroyed 139 acres of public land. All right. And they aren't being charged with terrorism, and they shouldn't be charged with terrorism. That's not an act of terrorism. That's just an act of it's a crime against property. The same as Alan Buford. But they trying to put Alan Buford in for 10, 20, 30, who knows, life. And they charging him under some terrorism type stuff. And I'm going to have to get myself updated on that case. So, again, this is just to show you they got laws in ways they treat white people, and they got laws in ways they treat black people. All right, let me continue. The jury also found, the evidence convinced them beyond a reasonable doubt. The jury also found Stephen Hammond guilty of committing a second arson in 2006. That summer, BLM firefighters were battling several significant fires caused by lightning strikes. The Harney County Fire Marshal imposed a burn ban, and a red flag warning was in effect. Despite the burn ban, and knowing that firefighters were in the area, Stephen Hammond set fires at night without notifying anyone. He did so to save his winter feed. After seeing the fires, the firefighters moved to a safer location. When confronted by a firefighter the next day, Stephen Hammond admitted setting the fires and made no apology for doing so. So, I mean, these guys for a number of years been committing crimes before they were ever even prosecuted. The crimes that the jury found the Hammonds committed carried 5-year congressionally mandated minimum sentences. We talk a lot about that on New Abolitionist Radio and Black Talk Radio Network in general. In October 2012, U.S. District Court Judge Michael R. Hogan imposed sentences below what the law required. So here, I'm sure this was a white judge. Y'all can check it if y'all doubt it. But I know the patterns and practices of the United States. Plus, that's all predominantly white state. All the judges are predominantly white males, so I think chances are that this is a white judge who violated the law that said he was mandated to give them at least 5 years, but he had empathy for these white men and didn't want to send this old white man, 70 years old, and his son, 46 years old, to prison for 5 years. He felt empathy. You think they feel that kind of empathy for any of our people? Go listen to Ramona Africa talk about the trial of the Move 9. Okay, now let me continue. The crimes that the jury, Hogan imposed sentences below what the law required. What kind of penalties is this judge facing for breaking the law? The U.S. Attorney Office appealed the sentences imposed by Judge Hogan because they were not the sentences mandated by Congress for the crimes committed. All right, so this judge broke the law himself. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed and reversed the Hammond sentences. The cases were sent back to the district court with a directive that the statute's mandate be followed. The Supreme Court. So this went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court upheld the Ninth Circuit's decision, and in October 2015, Chief Judge Ann Aiken imposed the 5-year prison terms. The U.S. attorney agreed to allow the Hammonds to self-surrender after the holidays. I mean, look at all this white privilege that they're getting here. You know, come on, y'all. Now, I'm almost done. Much has been said and written by persons who were not in the Pendleton courtroom during the trial or in Eugene during the sentencing hearings. Much of it is inaccurate. For example, the federal prosecutor has never called the Hammonds terrorists, an allegation made by some of the Hammond supporters. As acting U.S. attorney, I do not consider them to be terrorists. Of course not. They're white. You're white. At the sentencing hearing, I'm not going to play the race card or anything like that. I believe in practicing justice. And no, I wouldn't consider this an act of terrorism, but I would throw manslaughter, any charges related with the lack of concern for life. You knew these firefighters were out there. You could have killed a whole lot of people. Anyway, at the sentencing hearings, the federal prosecutor described the Hammonds' contributions to their community and urged the court not to impose the higher sentences recommended by the U.S. Probation Office. The prosecutor also assured the court that the sentences mandated by Congress were neither cruel nor unusual, given the seriousness of the crimes and the safety threat posed to the hunters in 2001 and the firefighters in 2006. So these jokers been out for a very long time. These crimes are over 10 years old, man. Over 10 years old, and they've been chilling and getting all this white privilege. And again, you know, wait till Max get ready to tell y'all about how Oregon is Ferguson and the racism being practiced there. The Hammonds received a fair trial. They were found guilty in Pendleton, Oregon, by a jury of their peers. And we're talking about a real jury of their peers. And they ultimately received lawful sentences mandated by Congress. As Americans, we have the privilege of being served by the finest judicial system in the world. Now, y'all know I disagree with that. But anyway, he goes on to say, despite suggestions to the contrary, what took place during this case was a process that followed the time-honored fundamental principles of the rules of law. From the investigation, negotiations, a public trial, with the presentation of lawfully admitted evidence, the jury's findings, judicial findings, appellate rulings, to the final imposition of sentence. Not to mention they admitted to some of these crimes. And one of their family members testified against them. We stand by the ultimate resolution of this case. Now here is the joke, and I'm going to let Max jump in here. Here's one of the jokes about these people, the Bundy boys or whatever the hell they want to call themselves. Besides the fact that these idiots took to occupying a empty federal warehouse and didn't have any supplies, and now they're on Facebook begging people to send them snacks and socks to keep them warm and all that, you know, besides that. But then these idiots talking about writing President Obama and asking him to commute the sentences. Look, 5 years ain't nothing. 5 years ain't nothing when we got people on a prison plantation for nonviolent, victimless crimes, all right, so-called crimes, drug crimes, who have never been in trouble before and were sentenced to life in prison. So, again, you know, the whole conversation has been around mandatory minimums and reforming that. And, you know, that's all a bunch of charade and a fraud up there. That criminal justice reform, that Congress talking about, it ain't really about reform. You can't reform slavery, as Max tells people. You have to abolish slavery. So these whiny tail white men need to have a seat. And they should be charged for breaking and entering, just like my little brother got sentenced for breaking into a trailer that he did not break into. There was no evidence showing he broke into anything, but these racist white people up here found him guilty without any evidence and sentenced him to prison, and they took 10 years of my little brother's life. And then not only that, while he was in prison, they forced him to work as a prison slave on a dang-gone turkey farm. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and let Max jump in here and let him share his research on the system of injustice, the racist system of injustice in Oregon, to show you that these whiny tail white men ain't got nothing to be complaining about. Max, go ahead.
Yes, sir. As people know, we do the America is Ferguson series, where we research the connections between prisons, private prisons, police, for-profit policing, and so on and so forth, with the community and government itself. And we look at how racism is involved in this particular instance. So let me show you some of the highlights. I won't read the whole thing. I'll save one of the new abolitionist radio programs upcoming, but I will post it for you so you can read it in its entirety. I'll read the highlights of it. In Oregon, black people only make up 2% of the population. Whites make up 87.9, basically almost 90% of the population. Native Americans only make up less than 2%, and Hispanics make up 12.5%. Now remember, I just said blacks only make up 2% of a population with a total population of nearly 4 million people. Now out of that total population, when it comes to rates of incarceration per 100,000 population, whites are incarcerated at 502, blacks at 2,930, and Hispanics at 573. That means that blacks are incarcerated in Oregon at a rate of 6-1, while making up only 2% of the population. How can you even imagine something like that? You're only 2% of the population, but you're 6-1 in the prison.
Mike, let me share this one. Let's not leave out the American Indians, okay, in Oregon, and Alaskans that live in Oregon. The Oregon incarceration rates by race and ethnicity from 2010 census data shows that 1.316 out of 100,000 people in that group are sentenced to prison. So let me break that down. You know, whites are the least incarcerated or enslaved in Oregon. Then is Hispanics. Then American Indians and Alaska Native. And the most incarcerated is black people in that country. In that racist state. Please continue.
Right. You're absolutely right. And Native Americans only make up 1.2% of the population. They're even less of the population than African Americans, with that rate of incarceration being applied to them. Now, they look at this, the state of Oregon looks at this as a job creation venture, as a way of earning money for the state itself. Now, according to the research that I've gathered here, cumulatively, there are roughly 70,000 people who are either in prison, in jail, or under state they're being covered by the state, whether it be probation, parole, or so on and so forth. So that's only 70,000 people. But the number of jobs created to take care of those 70,000 people is more than the 70,000 itself. According to
you don't
the
mean AS, take care of, do you? You mean to oversee, as in...
Right, the overseers. According to the AFSCME, the Representative Corrections Members are automatically part of the AFSCME, Corrections United, the nation's union's auxiliary organized devoted to corrections employees nationwide. And Corrections United includes 62,000 corrections officers and 23,000 other corrections officers. So right there, you have over 80,000 people who are being paid to monitor, maintain, supervise 70,000 people.
Wow.
How much money do they spend in Oregon to do this?
Max, let me interject something. Let me interject this, and we got to take a quick station identification break, and you can continue on the other side. But let me interject this. This is why I tell people that this country, one of the primary pillars of the economy when this country was founded in 1776, was slavery. All right? That's how they generate wealth and jobs for people. And it's going on in 2016. And we're going to take a quick station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. We are joined right now by Max Parthas, a 21st century new abolitionist and a producer and co-host of New Abolitionist Radio, heard every Wednesday night right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
They use force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. It wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview, and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I lost my career. I've lost financially. It's devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I'm here for my life, for my life, for my life, for my life.
How do you describe desperation to someone who is not desperate? Began a letter to me from U.S. political prisoner Ojo Mutulo, who went on to depict everyone in the management control unit at Trenton State being woken up at 1 o'clock in the morning by guards dressed in riot gear, holding doors. This country was born out of genocide. That's the political genesis of the slavery system, the political genesis of the prison system. This country was born out of genocide. That's the political genesis of the slavery system, the prison system. Slavery system is 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 the prison system. And this country was born out of genocide, 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 genocide.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News, and we're joined on the line by our brother Max Parthas. Again, if you have any questions, if you want to question the data, if you want to question anything that I'm expressing, hey, you're welcome to give us a call, 704-951-5030 is the studio line. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032#, and just hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. You can also use the web-based flash phone. Max, will you continue to tell us how Oregon is practicing slavery and practicing genocide against non-white people in that state?
Yes, as I pointed out, African Americans only make up 2% of the population, yet they're incarcerated at a 6-to-1 rate. The number of people who are incarcerated or monitored average somewhere around 70,000, and yet According to the AFSCME's own website, they employ more people than are incarcerated to manage the people that are incarcerated at a budget of $1.4 billion every year. That's $1.4 billion. Here in South Carolina, where I live at, the average of the budget every year is only $500 million. In the prison capital of the world, Louisiana, it's only $666 million. But in Oregon, it is $1.4 billion. Now, also, according to the AFSCME's website, they say that they have no private prisons. One of the reasons that they have no private prisons is because of this incident that occurred in 1997 when they were shipping women from Oregon to Nevada to house them there, and many of the women were complaining or making reports that they were being molested and raped in these private prisons, so they ended that.
Yeah, that's why we say, Max, we tell people we're talking about 21st century slavery and human trafficking.
Human trafficking, right. They were trafficking women to Arizona, pretty much the capital of human trafficking in America, and they had to cancel it because of rapes and abuses on those very same women from Oregon. According to their website, they say one of the biggest threats to corrections employees nationally are privately run for-profit prisons. Now, even the prison corrections employees who work for the federal government know that the private prisons are the problem. Private prisons take public jobs away and lower the standards for corrections pay. How? It's simple formula. They pay less in salaries and benefits, and they scrimp on security. You don't have to worry about private prisons in Oregon because they're illegal here. Thanks to an AFSCME bill passed years ago and an AFSCME following up with legislation that prohibits the Oregon DOC from even sending any of its prisoners to a private state, private out-of-state prison. Private prisons are simply not an issue in Oregon due to AFSCME diligence. Now, this is on their website.
Yeah, Max, and I don't know how much information you got to share, but I want to make sure I reserve time to cover some of these other topics. But
about 60 seconds more.
Okay, but I want to say this, though. Even if Bernie Sanders and the Arizona representative, I can't recall his name, if they are not going to champion their bill, the Justice is Not for Sale Act 2015, because I question why Bernie Sanders doesn't bring this up at every opportunity, because this bill would ban private prisons and jails all across the United States. That would be a major blow against 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And so you, the people, you need to be calling these officers that you've elected to the corporation USA Inc. and demanding that they pass that bill to ban private prisons and jails here in the United States. Oregon did it. They don't even allow it anymore. All right. But they're still practicing slavery. They're just doing it all in-house now and taking the human trafficking aspect out of it. But people, if you participate in People Activity Area number 6, which is politics, you need to be the champion for this bill to ban private prisons and jails in this country. Please continue, Max.
Well, their relationship with private prisons does exist. Although they say that they don't have any private prisons in Oregon,
they
do have investments in private prisons. As of 2013, Portland Landers tax dollars are currently supporting private prisons. These companies can only generate greater profits through an increase in prisoners and time served by prisoners. According to the City of Portland's Treasury Division Investment Portfolio Summary, as of September 30th, Portland held bonds in Wells Fargo with a market value of over $40 million. Wells Fargo is a large shareholder in GEO Group and Correction Corporation of America, the two largest private prison companies in the U.S. Through its investments in Wells Fargo, Portland is providing capital for GEO and CCA to lobby for policies that result in more people being incarcerated. And I'm going to close it with this final part. I found a website from the government of Oregon that only has one little paragraph on it. And it says, in the late 1800s, the Oregon State Penitentiary was leased to a private company. The private company was responsible for the maintenance of the institution, care of the inmates and maintaining the security of the institution. The company's objective was to use the inmates for low-cost labor in order to increase profits. Since this concept was becoming very popular nationwide, Oregon's legislation approved the experiment. The experiment was soon terminated. Why? In one day, every inmate at the penitentiary escaped. Most walked out the front gate. Now, the slavery part was of no concern to them. They ended it because they lost the slaves. And that is as much as I can give you today on Oregon is Ferguson. We will do it eventually on our new abolitionist radio program.
Well, Max, I want to thank you for calling in and sharing that information. I wasn't sure if we, because, I mean, we've been doing New Abolitionist Radio for how long now? We're entering into, what, our fifth year?
Fifth year, yes.
We've been doing this, and we looked at every state constitution to see if it mirrors the 13th Amendment that has the exception clause that allows for slavery as punishment for crime. And once we went through all 50 other states, came up with the idea to, let's follow up and do every state in light of the Ferguson report, which showed patterns and practices of racism being practiced against the citizens there. And we have shown thus far how every state that we've covered and looked at thus far is Ferguson. Thank you, Max, for all that you do, man. You are, I can't stress enough how valuable you are to the New Abolitionist movement. And it's just my honor to work with you all these years. Thank you.
Thank you very much as well, Scotty. I'm following your lead, brother. You're making the platform available, and you're giving the support to the people who need the support. And we certainly couldn't do this without you. I'll be listening to the rest of the show and look forward to hearing what you have to say.
All right. Good day to you. And tell Sister Tribal belated birthday. I tagged her on Facebook, but tell her I said happy birthday.
Will do, brother.
Peace. All right. Peace. All right. That was Max Parthas. You can check him out as well as Yohanan Eliah and myself as a co-host and co-producer every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. That's New Abolitionist Radio right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Now, let me wrap this up by saying, and I said a lot of this yesterday, but I'm going to restate it. See, this just proves that what I said yesterday was correct, that these whiny-tail white men ain't concerned about nobody's rights but their own. They ain't concerned about any injustice whatsoever, except for some imagined injustice against them. Now, I'm not saying that there are not white people in Oregon who have been convicted on nonviolent, victimless so-called drug crimes that didn't harm anybody else. I'm not saying they are not, you know, victims of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. But we have shared the statistical data with you that shows overwhelmingly, that non-white people, specifically black people, are the primary targets of the tyranny of the state of Oregon, of the tyranny of the United States of America, USA Inc., because they are getting federal grants to prosecute the drug war, okay? So they are in partnership with the federal government in spreading all this tyranny to non-white people, primarily. Very small percentage of white people are suffering, but that ain't what these whiny-tail white men who are occupying this federal building, they are not suffering any of that. None of it. In fact, they got off lightly. And they're going to get the ones that broke the law occupying this building illegally. You got law enforcement out there right now saying, oh, let's not react too harshly. Let's just let them calm down. And eventually they'll go home. Ain't even calling for these lawbreakers to be arrested. But then you want to talk about some Black Lives Matter protest across the country. And I addressed that yesterday as well. I may not address it on air. Look, do I advocate? First of all, I don't tell people how to protest. And I don't think there's any illegitimate way of protesting when you are suffering genocide and slavery in this country. But we know predominantly white people are not suffering from genocide and slavery in this country. But I'm not one to be telling people how to get their freedom. All right. I don't play the respectability politics and all of that. Y'all can kiss my behind with that crap. All right. When we're talking about slavery, we're talking about human trafficking. We're talking about genocide. All right. We're talking about the continuation of hundreds of years of oppression. And I don't see any of these so-called militias. I don't see any of these so-called oath keepers. I don't see any of these primarily white men with their occasional proxy racist tools of racism. I don't see any of y'all talking about this tyranny, because it don't affect you. In fact, you're probably employed by it. You're probably, if you're in Oregon, you're probably employed by it. One point, how many billion did Max say? Annually? You got more overseers than you got enslaved people in that state. This is the pillar of their economy, people. Ain't nothing changed. They're following in the footsteps of their founding so-called fathers, like Thomas Jefferson, who came up with a formula that showed that if for every enslaved black baby born on his plantation, his wealth increased 4%. And he shared that with other enslavers. Don't talk to me about freedom. Don't talk to me about liberty. You are the most evil, hypocritical scum of the freaking earth. And I'm going to end it there. I'm going to end it there before I get to cussing. Because I get angry, people. My blood starts to boil. I want to cut off heads. These are the evilest, most vile people on the planet. How do you have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prison labor force? That's because you practice in slavery. That's how. So anyway, I want to move on from that. In a related story, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this because I got some other things to get to. And then we got Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock where Brother Dave will be sharing some information with you on how black people, African-descended people, are the true indigenous people of this land, settled this land, all right? And that's what his show is going to be about at 6 o'clock p.m. Yesterday, I mentioned how over half of the American Revolutionary Army was black men. And look what these traitors, these racist bastards like Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and all the rest of them, look at what they did after the war was won and how they turned. And I was thinking today, I blame those non-white revolutionary soldiers for what happened. Because as soon as you got through whooping up on the British and then these racist, evil dogs kept practicing racism and enslaving people, you should have turned your guns on them. Then it's quite possible we wouldn't have still be battling slavery and genocide all these years later. Yesterday, I shared the article. Yesterday, I had on Sister Ramona Africa, one of the survivors of the bombing of the Move family home in Philadelphia in 1985, where the police were trying to serve an eviction notice on them and make them get out of their house, and they wouldn't get out of their house, and the fire department worked with the police to try to flood them out their house, even though they knew children were in there, women, pregnant women, children, animals in there. They didn't matter to these racist dogs. And they tried to flood them out. And they took their big fire hoses and just kept on spraying water in there, trying to flood them out the basement, because they had all went into the basement to try to push them out. It wasn't no, oh, let's just wait them out. They're going to run out of food sometime and they'll have to get hungry and give up. No, it wasn't none of that. Let's force them out. Let's force them out. And then when pumping all, who knows how much water they wasted that day trying to flood these people out of their own home. And then when that didn't work, the FBI gave the Philadelphia Police Department, which was under the leadership of the most vile, racist police chief probably ever known to American history. You know, and I only say that because I don't know that much, you know, about the other ones. Maybe Bull Connor will give him a run for his money. But this man was an open, vile racist. I'm talking about Frank Rizzo, who later would become mayor of Philadelphia. And so the FBI gave Frank Rizzo some C4 explosive, and they dropped it on the roof of this house. Again, knowing that there were men, women, pregnant women, unborn children, and children, as well as their pets. Well, they wouldn't call them pets because they don't believe in enslaving animals, but, you know, they were ahead of their time. Before there was PETA, there was the MOVE organization. And they dropped a bomb on them and burnt them people alive. Murdered them. Murdered them. So anyway, I had mentioned yesterday about how these white people in Oregon are being treated versus to how the MOVE organization, black people, were treated in Philadelphia in 1985. It's not that I was calling for the federal government to go in and drop a C4 bomb on them. I wasn't calling for that. And the United States government has done that a number of times. As someone reminded me, they also killed about 73 men, women, and children at the Branch Davidian complex. And regardless of any kind of criminal abuse that was going on at that complex, you don't try to burn people out, and then you end up so killing the people that you claim you was there trying to liberate from a cult. And you burn up all them people. The United States, I'm telling y'all, got a history of this kind of stuff. That was one of the rare instances of where they burnt white people up alive. But I wasn't calling for that to happen to these idiots, because they'll get hungry, their feet will get cold, and then they'll give up. I wasn't calling for that. But I just wanted to compare and contrast that these people, man, y'all ain't got nothing to be complaining about. I ain't gonna say y'all ain't got nothing to complain about, because some of the issues you bring up are legitimate. But for the most part, though, you ain't being enslaved. You ain't being hunted down. And, well, I take that back. Over 500 of you got killed by police last year. But, you know, you wouldn't know it by the way y'all act, unless y'all admitting that y'all got a bunch of violent thugs in y'all community, and the police are totally justified to gun them down in the street. That's neither here or there. Let me stay on track. Anyway, this person by the name of, what is this writer's name? Karima Towns? And it's possible this is a black person. That don't matter. It don't matter. Black people can be uninformed just like everybody else can be uninformed. And maybe she didn't do her due diligence and properly research this case. And that is why she gonna write about it, comparing it the same way I was comparing and contrasting. But in her article, she claims that the MOVE family, who were all in their basement, we heard from one of the survivors yesterday, and claimed, and this writer want to claim that the MOVE family shot at the police. There was one shot fired, that is what she wrote. There were no shots fired by MOVE family. You know, you in a underground basement that's below the ground, and all the police is up on the street level, and then you had police snipers on the roofs and whatnot in the surrounding area. And if she had done her research, she would know, as was stated yesterday, that the cop who was shot, a black cop, I believe, was shot from a bullet. The trajectory would have had to come from above street level, not below street level, from above street level. So he was killed by friendly fire. And I'm inclined to believe that it wasn't even an accident. That them racist white cops said, we gonna kill this nigga, and he gonna give us an excuse to go in and kill these other niggas. See, y'all proxy racists, y'all gonna learn. Y'all gonna learn. They'll be all your buddies and be talking about, you know, all lives matter and all that kind of crap, as long as you're helping them get away with practicing 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And you want to be the proxy racist too, so they can say, hey, we integrated. We're not racist. We got black slave catchers. You know what I'm saying? So I don't feel any empathy for you. I don't feel any empathy for you. Unless you just ignorant and you ain't figured it out yet. But a lot of you know exactly what you're doing. But anyway, for this person to try to compare and contrast and then want to share this misinformation, that's suggesting that the Move family caused the police to bomb, to start shooting at them and try to kill them. And then I was reading the comment section in there, and they're talking about how the Move family had guns and stuff like that. So what? Big deal they had guns. See, that's what I'm talking about. When there ain't nobody questioning these white men having guns, at least nobody that's of their political persuasion, nobody's questioning them. But soon as black people have some guns, oh, we got to pass laws to get rid of the Second Amendment like California did under Ronald Reagan when the Black Panther Party made the mistake. It wasn't intentional, but made the mistake of walking on to the House floor in the state legislature of California with their legally owned firearms. Then all of a sudden, oh, we got to get the guns out the hands of the people. And I don't remember the NRA coming to stand up for the Black Panther Party, exercising their Second Amendment rights. So the Move family, hell, I mean, that's what we are told. That's American, right? That's American. We got people calling for people to be armed today to combat terrorism. Well, guess what? That's why black people armed themselves throughout history, to protect themselves against terrorism, whether it was your hillbilly, redneck, white boys in a sheet, or whether it was your racist white police officers wearing a badge. And then a lot of them was in the Klan and was under them sheets at night. Read the book, Negro with Guns, written by Robert F. Williams, a North Carolinian, and I'm proud to say that, who had a tremendous impact on the area that I live in. And my family, own family members, my uncle and my grandfathers, in arming themselves and defending the homestead against these white terrorists. That's the only reason we're still here. But we're still surrounded by suspected terrorists. So, I mean, I just really take issue when people, you know, try to act like they're anti-racism. And again, I don't know this person. Maybe they just coming from a place of ignorance or whatnot. They didn't do the research. People make mistakes. So, I'm not going to blast on this person. But this is very, you know, important. It is very important that we get the correct facts and that we not try to make points against racists using black people, and then we don't get the proper information. And again, I'm not calling for them white men, and if they got women with them, I'm not calling for them to be bombed. I'm not calling for them to be burnt alive. But what I am calling for them is to stop acting like you being victimized, because you ain't. And yesterday you want to talk about, oh, we doing this for all of America. We doing this for the loggers. We're doing this for the ranchers, and we provide jobs. Yeah, you're using prison slave labor, man. Prisoners in this country process fish, meat, and poultry. I told you they had my little brother wrongfully convicted working on a doggone turkey farm. But I bet you that job, if he'd have went to that farm and applied for a job before he went to prison, they wouldn't have hired him. So y'all need to shut up. And if you want to be about justice, then you need to be about justice. If you really want to fight tyranny, then you need to turn your guns on those who are practicing slavery and human trafficking in this country. Otherwise, just shut up. Go sit down somewhere, because we ain't trying to hear nothing you got to say. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where they practice slavery, human trafficking, and all manner of evil against the people on a daily basis. We're going to take a station identification break, kick some message music, and then we will be right back.
No, it really isn't. Because, see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice, except you mean in, you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are or how tall you are or who your cousin was or anything like that, or what so-called nationality you have. Like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag, if you don't believe in not mistreating people, you've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing.
Because they never want to beat him on the back. See, America, in terms of where she goes and, you know, like who she controls, a whole sphere of influence is diminishing. America is fighting on about 5 or 6 different fronts right now. Latin America, you know, like Africa, Middle East, and Vietnam, and here domestically. So I think that, you know, given the system and given that it operates off the military-industrial complex, which means that war is profitable and that, you know, like General Steel, or USS Steel, must make steel for tanks to hire people, you know, to give people jobs so they can spend the money to buy other goods. The very fact that the system operates off that principle means that when the man comes back, when the man is run out of every country, then it will become necessary to wage war in his own country.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast. I want to share some quick events with you tomorrow. You can find this on Facebook. I shared the information, or I shared the link. It's linked up to today's program notes. But tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, this is in Philadelphia, at 801 South 48th Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is at Calvary Church, Philly International Action Center. It says that the government is hell-bent on killing Momia, and we are hell-bent to stop this. We are actively organizing to get Momia the medicine for Hep C and for his release from prison. Several major things have happened in the case recently. We are holding this town hall meeting to give people updates as well as organize our next steps. Many people have ideas as what needs to be done. This is the time and place to share those ideas. Those are some actions. There are some actions that require your help. So for our listeners, and we do have a media partner, Time for Awakening Radio is based out of Philly, Pennsylvania. If you and we got a lot of listeners from that area. So if you in that area, this is very important, man. This is what I was talking about the other day. All right. We know what else is happening in Pennsylvania right now. The trial of Bill Cosby. And we are seeing all across social media all of this widespread support from black men for this man who admitted in a deposition that he obtained drugs to drug women, knock them out, and have sex with them. And we're seeing all this widespread support for Bill Cosby based on his skin color, not based on justice. But yet, we don't see widespread support for people in prison, unjustly, wrongfully convicted, set up, who were out there struggling to implement a system based on justice, like Momia Abu-Jamal, a Black Panther Party member since he was a teenager, writing for the Black Panther newspaper, the local paper there. And he was the people's journalist. All right. Because he went to broadcast journalism school and he did his job. He is the one who called into that radio station in Philadelphia and got that judge who sentenced the Move 9 to all 9 of them for the single murder of a black cop who was killed by white cops and sentenced them to 30 years to life in prison. And he got that judge to admit on air, over the airwaves, who killed the cop. And the judge said, I don't know who killed the cop, but you certainly sentenced these people to prison for 30 years to life. And you know that you couldn't prove either. None of them did it. And it was physically impossible for them to do it while they were hiding out in a basement. And then you destroy the evidence. I don't want to rehash yesterday's program, but take a listen to one of the survivors. So anyway, Momia needs our help, along with a whole bunch of other political prisoners. And as a people, as black people, and as non-white people, and as white people who want to practice justice, y'all, we need to be more vocal. I'm just at a loss of words because it makes me angry, man. It makes me angry. Let a celebrity get in some trouble for thinking that they can do what other white men do in that industry. And Negroes will be coming out the woodwork. But then when it comes to our freedom fighters, like the Move 9, like Momia Abu-Jamal, like Herman Bell, like Leonard Peltier, like the NATO 3, I could go on and on and on and on. A lot of you Negroes ain't nowhere to be seen. So let me get out that information again. Tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time at 801 South 48th Street in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at Calvary Church, which is the Philly International Action Center, they will be having a town hall meeting to discuss what's going on with the case. Political Prisoner Radio, the last podcast you will see, I believe it's the last podcast, but you'll find it in our archives. We had Noel Hanrahan on from Prison Radio, which is based in the state of Pennsylvania. giving you the details in that case where you had a lady, what's this woman, a job prosecutor or attorney for the prison system of Pennsylvania, lie and introduce false testimony, and then got ratted on by the prison doctor who said, I didn't write that, and I didn't say that. And I told you before we came up in here that that was not correct. And she introduced it anyway. This is a very important case. You got, across this nation, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, people suffering from hepatitis C that they probably contracted in prison. And here you got this drug that has a 95% cure rate, and you won't give it to them? You won't allow them access to it? This is cruel and unusual punishment. This is not, that's the real cruel and unusual punishment. Making these white men who got convicted of setting public lands on fire, putting people's life at risk, being sentenced to 5 years. That ain't no injustice. That is not, you know, a cruel and unusual punishment. Cruel and unusual punishment is when you deny health care to people under your care and control, and you deny it to them. That's premeditated murder. Tell y'all, man, these people evil, man. And I hear these Republicans talk about the war. I heard somebody, I was reading some article, some conservative talking about the war on political correctness. You want to talk about a war on political correctness? Tune in to this show. Tune in to this station. We don't care nothing about being politically correct. We tell you like it is, how it is, all day long. And this is one of the worst places on the planet that you could choose to bring a child into, to bring life into. If I had known then what I knew, what I know now, when I was in my 20s and was a young married man producing babies, no, I would have had second thoughts. But I love my children. I love my grandchildren. I'm glad they're here. And that's why we got to fight to make sure that they don't get our children and grandchildren. I'm tired of this going on generation after generation after generation. Dang it. We're going to have to end this, man. And we need to end it now. The other information I wanted to share is Eddie Africa's Solidarity Day. He was one of the Move 9 I've been talking about. This will be on January the 8th. What they're asking is that he must have come up for parole. Again, all of the Move 9 have been, if you want to call them that, model prisoners. Even the prison officials say these people should be paroled, and how they have, you know, these clean records and not getting in trouble and actually helping to educate and resolve situations on the prison plantation with other prisoners and just model prisoners, even though I don't want to use that word. I can't think of any other term. And then the parole board, because they corrupt, don't let them out, because they want to continue try to force them to commit to a crime of killing this cop when the cop was killed by other cops. So they're asking that you call the parole board, the Pennsylvania Parole Board, put the heat on them, put the pressure on them. Don't be rude. Don't cuss them out. But be firm in your demands that they release the Move 9. We're talking specifically about Eddie Africa. The parole board's phone number is 717-787-5699. That's 717-787-5699. Or you can email RA, that's RA-PBPPOPC at PA.gov. Please click on the link. It'll take you to get this information. And ask for a just, this is their words, a fair and just parole hearing and immediate parole for Edward Goodman Africa. Please get that information. Please make the calls. The calls do help. But like I said, as many people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of you on social media talking about some Bill Cosby. We could get 100,000 people to flood the phone lines for the release of these political prisoners. Man, who knows what kind of difference we'll make. And I'm saying that with love in my heart, man. I care about these people. They, you know, and it's really a black eye on the black community. It really is. It really truly is. But, you know, got people standing up today, standing up for justice and whatnot. They could become political prisoners today. And then 40 years from now, you know, we won't, they'll be forgotten about. We got to end this, man. We got to end this cycle of apathy in our community. We can't be forgetting our elders who struggle and sacrifice for us. This is sickening to me, man. Anyway, let me continue on. Let me see. Let me check the phone lines, conference line again. We don't have any calls on the conference line. In just about 15 minutes, Tando Radio Show will be on the air. Well, really 10 minutes. I need to give them more time. But anyway, let me read y'all what this Republican politician said from my district, Patrick McHenry, the corporate officer elected from this district to represent so-called, quote unquote, represent the people at the corporation, at the corporate meetings of USA Inc. He says that President Obama's new actions on firearms are nothing more than another executive overreach intended to infringe on the constitutional rights of law-abiding Americans. They would not have prevented recent tragedies and would do nothing to address one of the root causes of these actions, mental illness. Instead of trampling on the Second Amendment, President Obama should focus on enforcing the laws currently on the books, which, when properly enforced, can keep guns out of the hands of violent criminals. My full statement. I ain't got time to read his full statement because it's probably just a bunch of crap. Just like that's a bunch of crap. Now listen, I'm going to keep it real with y'all. As I said in my video, you can check out some of our videos on our YouTube channel, Black Talk Radio. But it may be under Black Talk Media, but you'll find it. Anyway, I said, look, let's use common sense here. There is a problem with gun violence in this country. It's not a huge problem like they making it out to be. I looked up the stats, right? And less than 12,000 people every year are affected by gun violence. Now, that becomes a lot over the years. But you got, you know, over 300 million people in this country. So that's not even a 0.5% of the total population. But it's a problem nonetheless. It is a problem. You know, we got too much gun violence in the black community. We got too much gun violence all over this country. People running in schools, shooting them up and whatnot. I just think it's common sense that we should be able to come to a compromise and that people shouldn't be able to sell hundreds of guns over the internet to people they don't even know who they're selling these guns to. I don't think that we should be allowing people to sell hundreds, if not thousands, of guns at gun trade shows to people they don't even know who they're selling the guns to, because they don't care. All they want is the money. This country, again, this is greediest people on the face of the planet. Profit before people, you know. But I think that's common sense legislation. You know what I'm saying? And even though this ain't legislation, and this is where they do have a valid point, is that you're issuing executive orders. And when the government, the way we were taught, is supposed to work, is that we elect corporate officers. The corporate officers propose legislation. The legislation gets debated on. They take a vote. If they get enough votes, it then goes to the other half of Congress, the Senate. They may amend it and add stuff to it, even though, you know, they shouldn't be doing all of that. But they vote, and if it passes both houses of Congress, it goes to the CEO of USA Inc., and then he signs it into law. Them taking these executive actions, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but it don't seem right to me, because I know they have taken issued executive orders in the past that were unjust, all right, and they harmed a lot of people globally. So I don't think that their gripes about the unconstitutional process in which this was done is invalid. Their position is invalid, but that on you know, allowing these loopholes and whatnot is invalid. But being concerned about CEOs using executive action to go to legislate laws and whatnot, that's a legitimate concern. But I will tell you, these same people that's complaining, and primarily they're Republicans, these same people that was complaining, y'all wasn't complaining when Bush and Cheney was doing their dirt up in there. Y'all wasn't complaining when Clinton was doing it. You wasn't complaining, well, you might have been, but you only complain when the CEO is of the other party. That what makes your gripes illegitimate. That what makes it, now I ain't gonna say illegitimate, but it makes you hypocrites. It makes you, you know, lacking in credibility. Because Bush can do all this crazy. Let's not even talk about Bush. Let's talk about what I said to Patrick McHenry. And even though I ain't vote for him, and I do vote, and I don't think my vote really matters in terms of federal office. I more or less vote for the local offices. But since I'm there, I might as well check the box for whichever one of those federal offices. But I don't expect them to do right by the people. All right, because I pay attention to patterns and practice throughout the years. So I do talk to his office. I do write emails. I do leave voicemails. I have got into debates over the telephone with his staff members about them practicing slavery and whatnot. So he posts stuff on Facebook. I will comment on it if it's worthy of me commenting. But like I told him, and I'll just read this to you since I'm short on time. This is my opinion in a nutshell. First of all, Obama isn't the first to use executive actions, and I'm willing to bet that you voted to pass the most recent National Defense Authorization Act, which strips citizens of their due process rights. Congress isn't forcing the CEO of USA Inc. to seek a declaration of war as prescribed by the Constitution before going to war to overthrow some country and engaging in regime change. I also do believe there's a bill in Congress called the Redeem Act that will restore people's full rights after serving out their prison sentences. That's in reference to him talking about keeping guns out the hands of violent criminals. Look, somebody served their time. They served that prison sentence and they didn't, you know, whatever. I ain't going to revisit them that case in Oregon, because those people did, you know, it was, they didn't even, weren't even forced to serve the mandatory minimum. One of them only went to jail for 3 months and they complained. Man, but what the Redeem Act addresses is the fact that they use that to target mainly black people, but non-white people. And it does affect a small minority of white people. You get that felony label on you, you get out of prison, you even do your parole is up, but yeah, they still deny you your voting rights. They use it as a legal way to discriminate against you in housing, in employment, in education, in every people activity area. They use that, and including your Second Amendment rights. If a person does their time, their rights should be restored to them. But I know why you don't, because you're practicing racism and white supremacy. And while you are willing to white sacrifices, Mr. Neely Fuller calls a few of these white people, the overwhelming majority of the people that you're practicing discrimination against are non-white, primarily black people. So that's why I don't buy into the violent keep guns out of the hands of violent criminals. Man, you don't get where the Constitution talk about lifetime punishment. And I think I wrote that. Let me continue what I wrote. Where in the Constitution does it say you get to punish people past their sentence, which is used to discriminate against them in voting, housing, and employment, and their Second Amendment rights? I also find it interesting that a lot of politicians like to talk about we are under all these threats of terrorism, but unwilling to pass legislation to close loopholes that allow people to bypass background checks. And I'm still divided on these background checks, okay? You know, I think there should be background checks, but I think that if you are taking certain medications where the symptoms or the side effects are suicidal and homicidal thoughts, I think you should not be in possession of a gun, and you shouldn't be allowed to buy some guns until whatever is ailing you is healed and you're off of them psychotic drugs that you're getting from the pharmaceutical industry. All right. And that's common sense to me. If we know that a person is mentally deficient now, we shouldn't allow them to buy guns. If you got the IQ of a little child, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. You got a bona fide medical problem with your brain. Those are common sense things right there. All right. But again, I am not for continuing to punish people for a lifetime because they've been in prison for whatever they've done. I went on to write, no, this Congress has wasted time and money trying to repeal Obamacare that you know he is going to veto. I am not informed enough but will resource the constitutionality of executive orders, but I find the criticism to be hypocritical when Democrats and Republicans are working together to strip citizens of their freedom and liberty with unconstitutional laws. All we see in Congress is politicians pushing the agenda of lobbyists and special interest groups and corporations. None of you have any credibility when it comes to the Constitution, and all of you need to be replaced. And I mean that, man. I mean that. Now, while I think what President Obama did with that executive order, if it is, in fact, just closing loopholes, because I don't think that people should just be able to purchase hundreds of guns online and without, you know, nobody knowing who they are. That's just common sense now. Come on. It's common sense. But I do think we should do more to keep the hands out of guns out of the hands of the mentally defective and people who are on psychotropic drugs that list in the side effects homicidal and suicidal tendencies. Okay? Now, I agree with that. And that includes cops too. So anyway, I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time debating this. There are legitimate concerns on both sides of the aisle, but those legitimate points are being lost in the partisan demagoguery, the partisan hackery. And nobody wants to look at this objectively. And again, I do agree that we have to be careful about presidents is issuing executive orders. But it's mighty funny that the president can issue executive order on this so-called gun control stuff, but he isn't willing to issue an executive order to free every enslaved person who's in a federal prison right now over nonviolent, victimless, so-called drug crimes. He hasn't issued an executive order to shut down Unicor, another corporation owned by the corporation USA Inc. that's using prison slave labor. All their products and services, which they market to other corporations, are provided for by prison slave labor. So that go to show you, man, these people can do stuff, but they ain't doing it. I wouldn't have a problem with him issuing an executive order because that only affects the executive branch. That's federal jails. Federal prisons. So that's totally within his constitutional purview to release all of those people who shouldn't even be there in the first freaking place. But in terms of executive orders in general, and trying to legislate through executive orders, they have a point. They have a valid concern, and you should be concerned about it too. We cannot fall into this label of their team versus my team. Because if you black, ain't none of them playing for you. Even if they got black people on their team, that team ain't working for you. Anyway, y'all stay tuned for Tando Radio Show coming up. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., a country or a corporation, masquerading as a nation, as a government of the people, for the people, by the people. That's really a corporation for the corporations. And they practicing slavery and human trafficking. And they're engaged in all kind of killing, mass killing, all over the planet. And right here, behind these enemy lines. So you need to develop battlefield skills, battlefield awareness. On Tando Radio Show, they talk a lot about preparedness. You need to be prepared for whatever may come down that pipe. Because right now, the mass majority of people, y'all just setting yourselves up to become casualties on this battlefield America. With that said, I'll be back on air Wednesday night, New Abolitionist Radio, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Make sure that you tune in and bring a friend. Stay tuned for Black Tando Radio Show.
We also recognize that individuals do not create rebellions. Conditions do. Until they begin to address themselves to those conditions, rebellions will continue and they will escalate. They will escalate. Sometimes the question has been raised about why black men fight and have fought for this country. It is the black man's implacable will to be free that makes him fight for this country. And it is that same will that will make him fight this country, fight this country, fight. I want to address myself now to problems as they exist in the black community across America. And America cannot be considered as a stable and just society. But no stable and just society can mount a successful offensive against black youth who break a window and at the same time plead that it is powerless to protect black youth who are being murdered because they seek to make American democracy a reality, reality, reality. Each time a black church is bombed or burnt, that is violence in our streets. Each time a black body is found in the swamps of Mississippi and Alabama, that is violence in our land. Each time black right workers cannot be protected by the government, that is anarchy. Each time a police officer shoots and kills a black teenager, that is urban crime. You see, we recognize America for what it is, the Fourth Reich. And we tell America to be on notice, because if you are going to play Nazis, black folks ain't gonna play Jews.